You are listening to the Streets MN Podcast, a place where conversations about Minnesota's transportation and land use are expanded through research and informed commentary.
Welcome to the Streets.MN podcast. My name is Bill Lindeke, and I'm coming to you from St. Paul's West Side. I'm excited to bring you today a converse. Hello, and welcome to the Streets.MN podcast. My name is Bill Lindeke. I'm coming to you from St. Paul's West Side. I'm excited to bring you today a conversation with two people, Nancy Gardner and Tom Malin. They are both residents of downtown Minneapolis that organized an effort to successfully stop a large parking ramp from being constructed in their neighborhood. Nancy and Tom live near the Mississippi River on the northern part of downtown Minneapolis, and they're located in these townhomes very close to the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis and the Hennepin Avenue Bridge. When we recorded our chat, it was an auspicious moment because the week before, both Nancy and Tom had testified at a dramatic meeting of the Minneapolis Planning Commission. Yeah, that is a real thing that happens, where the plans for the parking ramp had been narrowly rejected. The day after we chatted, a Fed spokesperson for the Federal Reserve announced that the plans for the ramp's construction had been canceled, so we didn't really know that at the time we were talking, but it was an exciting development that happened right afterward. So I thought I would share this conversation with Nancy and Tom, who organized against this parking ramp, about their work and why they got involved in this and what they were thinking and what their rationale was. So, yeah, it's an exciting story about an 800-space parking ramp that, for the time being, is not being built in downtown Minneapolis. And I hope you enjoy the conversation. Before we get, though, to the main part of the podcast, I want to pause and let you know that this podcast is sponsored by Nate Pence, Nate Pence and Pence Homes Realty. Nate Pence is a realtor with Pence Homes at Keller Williams Classic Realty Northwest, and you can start your own home search at pencehomes.com. That is spelled P-E-N-T-Z homes.com. If you have any questions about the buying or selling process, just shoot him a message. His email is nate@pencehomes.com, P-E-N-T-Z-H-O-M-E-S, or you can call him. He loves to get calls at 612-308-1122. Nate is a great guy, and stay tuned for another segment of Ask a Realtor, which is a thing that I like to do with Nate, where I ask him dumb questions that I've always been wondering about buying or selling a house. I've never bought or sold a house, and so I don't really know much about it, and I have him explain it to me. And that's the whole idea of Ask a Realtor. So I learned something, hopefully you learned something, and it's a good chance to hear and learn more about the real estate world as it is today with Nate Pence, a guy who really knows what he's talking about. So with that said, let's get on with the conversation. Here's my chat with Nancy Gardner and Tom Malin, who for now have stopped a parking ramp from being built in downtown Minneapolis. Okay, well, welcome to the podcast, Streets MN Podcast. I'm here in the living room, Nancy Gardner, beautiful place here by the Mississippi River, with Tom Malin also, who you live nearby, Tom, is that right?
Sure.
Yeah. So tell me, we're here to talk about the parking ramp proposal from the Federal Reserve, which is your next door neighbor here, it looks like.
Yes.
So tell me about that, Nancy. First of all, how long have you both lived over here, and what do you think about living so close to the Mississippi in downtown Minneapolis?
Well, I moved here about 19 years ago from a suburb, Lake Minnetonka, and I just love being down here. The longer I'm here, the more I find that it's a fun, vibrant, interesting place, and it's really changed in the last 19 years. There's a lot more density, but that also means there's a lot more restaurants and dry cleaners and amenities for people. We realize that a lot of people come to the North Loop for that same kind of a vibe.
Yeah. Great. And how about you, Tom? How long have you been downtown here?
We've lived downtown since 1996. Mm-hmm. And over by Loring Park, and we are great fans of the Guthrie, and we like to walk to the Guthrie to take the shows in. And so when the Guthrie said we're moving, we waited until the Guthrie decided they were moving to the river, and we said, okay, We'll move two.
Okay.
So we are able to walk from here to the Guthrie and back.
Wow, great.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah, it's right along the Mississippi past the St. Anthony Waterfall. Sort of, it's where I bring tourists if I'm bringing people
exactly.
in from out of town.
And we can look out over the Nicollet Island. We have had deer in our property. We've had beavers. We've had fox. We have had turkey. So it really brings you to the fact that this is an important part of Mississippi and really needs to be, or part Minneapolis and really needs to be protected.
Yeah. I guess it's a good segue to why are we here today, right? So, So we're here to talk about the parking ramp proposal. Just for people who don't know about it, maybe fill us in on like where we are, to me, and what this project is all about.
Well, this is going. The Federal Reserve Bank is has been a good neighbor for a very long time to this area, and one of the pioneers building here. They want to build an 800-car, five-story, 493-foot parking ramp on the last piece of open land on the Mississippi River. And we heard about it when the city sent us a letter saying there was going to be a public hearing, and we're invited to participate in that if we chose to. It was before the Heritage Planning Commission.
Yeah, and we got the letter because we're within 350 feet of the proposed project. So that's how we got notified in the meeting. The first meeting was going to be with the Heritage Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And we had we asked our management organization if they could set up a meeting with the Federal Reserve Bank and their team, because we'd never actually seen a detailed presentation. So the bank and the architects and some of their consultants and their builders came along and presented to us and said, this is what is being proposed. And then about a week later, we had the Heritage Planning Commission, which at the time, we didn't fully understand what the Heritage Commission did.
Nobody really understands what the Heritage Preservation Commission is doing. I have to tell you. But
we were all lined up with our material on what we knew at that point about traffic congestion, et cetera. And they said, basically, we don't want to hear any of that. All we're interested in is what's underneath the line, and is it a historical artifact? And so one of the presenters talked about that there's an ironworks buried underneath, and some parts of that are historically significant because the ironworks was used to feed the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
But it came heading north up the river, if you're
okay.
This is also a different part of the city. There are two districts here, the St. Anthony watershed and the downtown warehouse. So there are a lot of reasons that it's very restrictive what you can do here, because this is where the city was born. And there's a lot of movement up and down the river to protect and care for this area. And this was one of the most vital parts of the growth of the Mississippi River, or Minneapolis. It was right on the Mississippi River.
And it's also, just to add to what Nancy said, it's also covered by the Shoreline Overlay District,
mm-hmm.
which covers part of the proposed development, but not all of it. So the complexity of the regulatory aspects, as well as the historical aspects, were significant.
So we were pretty disappointed because they went ahead and approved the project.
The Historic Preservation Commission?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Which then put it on to the next step, and was the Planning Commission.
All right.
And by this time, we were starting to get a little smarter and starting to interact more with the city to understand what information was being provided by The bank and the architects and the transit demand plan. And we started to make requests on the city for information. And they were very willing to share that information as they would to anybody.
Yeah, well, they're sort of obligated to.
They yes. are. But it's also kind of great that all the information we needed was available if you knew where to look for it. And we got a lot of advice from Steve Fletcher's staff. He's our third ward council person. We decided that we needed to reach out to more people. So we created a petition, and we made sure that it was correct. Yeah. We created letters that people could sign and add to. We created a Facebook page.
Right.
And reached.
That's where I noticed it, and also the
yeah.
Planning Commission hearing.
Yes. Yes. And then we started crafting. We have another member of our little group called Joanne Boris. And between the three of us, we sort of divided this monster into three separate parts. Tom did a deep dive into their own transportation traffic. What is it called, Tom?
Transit demand plan.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that in just a second here.
Oh, okay. And then I looked through the comprehensive plan, the 2040 plan, the Mississippi watershed plans, four or five other plans. And Joanne really focused a lot on community and how we were engaged and what the community thought about this. We had over 300 people sign the petition, again, opposing the ramp. And we brought over 100 letters to the city planning commission meeting, also opposing the ramp.
Can I back up and just ask, so you said the ramp's got 800 car stalls. So what, my understanding is that the Federal Reserve says they need this for employees or something. What's the case for it, I guess, before we dive into why
so it's the, maybe not? The bank has, just to get, the bank acquired the land from the Hennepin Railroad Authority. Mm-hmm. They had bought the land, the authority had bought the land just in case this would be the terminus for light rail. But when that decision was made to move it to Target Field, the Hennepin Railroad Authority said they had no use for it. So they single sourced the sale of it, the land, to the Federal Reserve Bank. And the bank studied what their options were, because when the bank moved here, there were all over 3,000 available car spots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this neighborhood, for folks who aren't from Minneapolis, has grown really quickly over the last right. 5, 10, 20 years, probably, since you all have been here.
Yes.
It used to be more sparsely populated, and now it's one of the hottest neighborhoods in the state, probably.
Part of the 2009 comprehensive plan was to really specifically build density in this area to bring people back downtown. Mm-hmm. And so people first filled up the warehouses, then developers filled up the parking lots, and parking went away.
Mm-hmm. So the rationale for the bank, and we can certainly understand it, is that not only for their employees, but they host a tremendous amount of events during the year, and there simply wasn't places for those people coming in to park. So they decided that they would propose to build a ramp, and then also make a number of spaces available to the local community, particularly the businesses along First Street, mm-hmm. who, if you're not familiar with it, have two very attractive, very in-demand restaurants. A number of other interesting shops that bring people downtown, a long-established lighting argument company that's been here in this neighborhood for...
Since the 20s.
Yes, okay. And all of them are short nigh on parking because each of those 3,000 spots have been built up by other developers building multi-leveled units. So... the bank thought that 800 car park space would give them room for neighbors of some number, as well as having enough room for their employees. They also have The bank also has high security parking underneath their building for another 220 odd places, but that tends to be reserved for, I think, senior staff or
the people that actually high security. Print the money.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
They did a lot of legwork. Talked to the North Loop Neighborhood Association. They talked to all the property, the business owners, downtown council, and they thought they absolutely had all of their bases covered. The only problem was they hadn't talked to us. And it turned out when we asked the neighbors that ultimately signed up for a development, but just people that lived our petition, was we were stunned by the number of neighbors, beyond just the development, but just people that live in the area, because Fourth Avenue is the major access point for the park and the river. We were stunned at the number of people that knew nothing about what was going on, about the proposal.
We did meet with the Federal Reserve representatives 8 days before the first hearing, and we're told that nothing could be done. This was a completed design, and they apologized for not reaching out to us sooner. We found out that they had been talking to people, like Tom said, for probably about a year and a half. Making sure that everyone was on board. They have a nice green space there, which is undeniable too. I mean, we need green space. But we felt pretty strongly that from the very beginning that they don't have a parking problem, they have a mobility problem. And sustainability comes into this pretty quickly. It's going against everything that is the city's going towards. It's flying in the face of the 2040 plan, the comprehensive plan, all the things that we discussed and we looked at.
And the city has a firm plan, independent of the 2040 plan, to reduce passenger traffic miles.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. They want to reduce that by 37-38%, and they are committed to reducing CO2 by 80% over 2050, which seems, in one sense, a long way away until you start analyzing how long it takes gets to take projects done or to switch modes of transport into things that are more efficient and are less costly relative to the amount of CO2 that's generated.
Okay, I want to pause briefly and remind you that you're listening to the Streets.mn podcast. Streets.mn is a nonprofit website that for over 5 years has been delivering great content about streets, cities, development, other cool things on critical urban topics, transit, housing, alleys, the pros and cons of parking your car at a parking meter, and other fascinating and, I think, interesting topics. You can support Streets.mn by joining and becoming a member. Just click the big button on the front top right of the website. Your support will help StreetsMN keep our website up and running and help us expand our content. So please give today and keep us up and running for the next 5 years too. So that said, it's time once again for an Ask a Realtor segment where I chat with Nate Pence of Pence Homes, classic Keller Williams, classic Realty Northwest, about being a realtor and what even it is. So here's Ask a Realtor. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome back to the Streets of Men podcast. Thanks for sponsoring it again.
Yeah, great to be back, Bill.
Tell me how you've been.
It's been well. It's been a good summer. We have been busy going to St. Paul more often than normal with Allianz Field opening up, so been having fun there.
Yeah, I've definitely seen you around at Blackheart.
A lot of time at Blackheart. I mean, it's a great. Go to Saturday night, go to a match, go back to Blackheart for a drink or two, sing some karaoke, drag show. What a perfect Saturday night in the city.
It's fun to see a mix of sock fans and drag show fans.
I love it.
Yeah.
Wes Bernine's done a good job over there.
Yeah.
So it's been awesome.
Anyway, tell me about Pence Homes and where you're at with the real estate market these days. I'm sort of curious. Last time we talked, what was it? Like 9 months ago? It was winter.
So it must have been a while.
It was like springtime. It was been over.
I remember
there
was snow out this window.
Well, there's snow. It's because it's Minnesota, so who knows how long ago it was.
Yeah.
Things have been going well. We have grown a little bit. We have a full-time admin now, Elena, who's been great. And then we have a couple, we have some three full-time agents who are now with us. Andrew Beck, Lydia Kalpi, and Sarah Martin.
Cool.
And then Kristen Sanders is our does our client events. We're actually doing one tomorrow. Another podcast one here. This, but Bill, you're invited. We're doing a picnic over at Como Park.
All right.
That you're St. Paul?
Yeah. All right.
I know. We're going to
St. Paul.
What time?
What time? By the time this podcast gets out, it'll all be over.
It's okay, but you'll be there. 4 o'clock to 8 o'clock.
Okay.
And we're having a raffle.
Cool.
So.
Well, tell me about the real estate market right now. Like,
yeah.
What does it look like?
Market's still being pretty competitive. So right now, inventories are actually lower than they were a year ago.
Inventories of unsold homes?
Of homes for sale.
Homes for sale.
Is down. So the market has constricted even more than it did a year ago, mainly for homes under $350,000. So the starter home price is still pretty tough right now. Interest rates have also gone down at about 18-month low.
Which makes it easier to get money.
It is easier to get money and cheaper to spend it.
All right.
And that's great for buyers because they have a little bit more buying power. And then some sellers are some of our clients are choosing to maybe take advantage of the lower rate because, let's say, they were going to sell and then buy a new place in the next year or two. Well, because interest rates have gone down by 0.75%, it made sense financially to sell now and then buy again. Because even if their homes increase in value, the money they're going to save by the interest rate was made it compelling enough for them to make the decision to move sooner. So some people, it's still tight inventory, but the market right now to buy in the summer and the fall is a lot calmer than the spring.
But big picture, it's still a really hot market in the sense that just there are way more people wanting to buy houses than there are houses.
It's true. And it's because it's fundamentally you can't build a home for under $350,000. And so that cost, that first-time home buyer price point is tight because of that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So where are you seeing a lot of activity for yourself?
Minneapolis, St. Paul is mainly our two big areas that we do probably 70 to 75% of our business, which makes sense since most of us live in the city.
Yeah.
And that's where we spend time and money and our friends and family live there. So we're doing a lot there. I'm still doing a lot of homes up near where I live in Camden. And then we're doing a lot over in the Midway neighborhood, Frogtown area.
Yeah. You just sold a home to my future sister-in-law.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's name or name, but yeah, it's cool, and she's happy. I was just at her house yesterday.
What do you think of the house?
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear their neighbor might be coming on the market too. You could be living next to your sister-in-law.
Considered it.
Yeah.
But maybe. Yeah, so that's an example. That's like sort of the St. Paul Midway area.
Yeah.
/ Newell Park area.
Yeah. That area is, I think, because of the access to the BRT line, the A line. And everything that's happening at university is making that area super attractive and compelling to live in.
So because it's so tight, what is it like for people buying houses or trying to buy houses? Like, do you have to beat people off with a stick, or what does that involve? Like Darwinian, like Lord of the Flies type scenarios? What are we talking about here, Nate?
Nothing like that yet. What we've been trying to do is trying to get everyone to fully understand what the market's like right now and have everything they can do so they're ready to go. So that means let's not go and look at any houses until you have your pre-approval all set.
Pre-approval means
your financing is in order with a bank.
Okay.
So that they look at your credit, they look at your debt to income, they look at your bank statements and your taxes to make sure they qualify. And then they send the file through underwriting and get it approved. Having that done before you see a home is not very important, because then we're not wasting any time. We're not looking at homes that people aren't qualified for. And then if you see a home you like it, you can put an offer in right away.
And that's key, right? I imagine you just want to strike while the iron is hot.
If you see a house you like, go for it.
Yeah.
You know?
How do you do pre-approval? Do you go to like a mortgage? What do you do?
Typically recommend people go through a mortgage broker or their local credit union.
Okay.
You can always go to a big bank, but those have all sorts of different complex issues that we don't need to get into right now.
All right. But mortgage broker, credit union is what you recommend generally?
Yeah, and then they're going to crunch the numbers to look at what your credit score is, what your debt to income is, verify your assets, where you're going to get the down payment, and verify that you, your job history. And then once all that is confirmed, then they kind of tell you the approval amount is basically how much you approved per month equals the price point that you're going to buy.
Okay.
So,
but because of lower interest rates, that changes it a little bit right now.
It does. We've seen some people have, you know, increase their purchasing power by anywhere from $20,000 to $40,000.
Which matters.
It does. And if you're paying over the course of 30 years, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Okay. Do you see the market changing anytime soon, or what does your crystal ball tell you?
Everyone is saying that there's going to be a market shift happen in the next 18 months. Probably due to a recession. We are due for a recession in the economy as a whole. And that, of course, housing is such a huge part of that. We've been on this current run on that we have with the economy being strong is due for a slowdown.
Mm-hmm.
So when that happens, it's going to affect housing. And it's probably going to see home values start to not necessarily decrease, but just increase at a slower rate. Right now, we've been seeing home values in the metro go up at about a 6-7% rate each year, and that's just not sustainable.
Yeah, that's a lot compared to inflation, which is, I think, lower.
Yeah, we want to see it about 3%.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I anticipate that there's going to be a slowdown just due to the economy, but not necessarily to like a housing crisis that we had 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Well, that's our market report. Thanks for talking to me, Nate.
Yep. Thanks, Bill.
Now, back to the conversation with Nancy Gardner and Tom Malin, who successfully fought a parking ramp proposal in Minneapolis's Warehouse District. I hope you find the conversation interesting, and thanks for listening to the Streets.mn podcast.
Yeah, so you're arguing that they're really going about this the wrong way. Talk to me about like why we don't need this parking.
Well, it's a bad thing for the environment,
yeah.
And it's a bad thing for the health of our neighborhood and the welfare of people. The their own transportation study says that traffic in our area would increase by 1,300 trips a day, car trips. Morning congestion delays on First Avenue would increase by 84%. And the car length just getting into the ramp would increase by 66%. They have a mitigation plan that would have a turn lane in there, but you would gain that by reducing the number of on-street parking and any possibility of bike lanes sharing the road, which is a very heavy traveled road on First Street.
Right.
First Avenue. Another thing they did in this plan is they looked at a four-block area near their campus. Well, we know that this is an incredibly heavily traveled area, including Hennepin Avenue, the Hennepin Avenue Bridge, and then 394 comes in on 3rd Avenue. Mm-hmm. And so we felt like this was a pretty inadequate study to deal with the traffic issues that an additional 800-car ramp would bring into our area. We also know that very soon, I think maybe by next fall, according to Steve Fletcher, two new parking ramps are going to be open that'll serve our area.
Hmm.
We're in the tsunami of traffic crises right now.
And their demand plan that the city asked them to do, just an excellent plan. I mean, with lots of good detail in it. But it showed that First Street intersection between First Street and First Avenue North at peak times was already below an acceptable level of service.
Mm-hmm.
So without the additional 1,345 trips, that intersection is already in trouble in the morning. It's already in trouble in the evening. And we knew that instinctively because when you talk to the neighbors and say, well, when do you use First Street? They will say, well, we never use it between 8 o'clock in the morning and then 10 because it's always jammed, and then similarly at night. But we had never found a way to quantify that until the transit demand plan was produced, and it was meticulously done, and it clearly proved quantitatively that this amount of CO2 was going to be generated no matter what mitigation option they had, because of the way, the only way you have access to the car park is through two very tight funnels. So traffic slows down. Once it slows down, CO2 buildup generates.
Yeah, I was. I'm always interested in seeing companies. I guess the Federal Reserve is a government agency technically, but seeing any big institution like that do more incentives for transit. So I can give you a whole list of places in St. Paul where this is a problem, but I want to see. You know, people are subsidizing your parking ramp. It costs a ton of money to build one of these ramps, by the way. Each space costs tens of thousands of dollars. You're subsidizing all of that, but you're not offering people, hey, have a half-price bus pass or whatever. Was that, did that ever come up with the conversation with the Federal Reserve folks?
The Federal Reserve has a plan for, they will subsidize metro passes.
Okay.
They're, I think, adding 1% more than what would be the median for businesses in the area. Mm-hmm. So they're certainly in support of people biking in. They offered in the car park spaces for bikes, spaces for electric vehicles where they could charge, also chars. But at the end of the day, those were sort of almost like cosmetic dressing on the fact that it still ends up to be an 800 car parks.
They said that they explored other alternatives. We, one of our partner organizations is Move Minneapolis.
Right.
They are more than happy to work with the Federal Reserve to help them build a transportation plan that will solve the mobility problems that they have bringing people into their campus. So we don't know. They haven't been very transparent about that, and obviously it's a private ramp and there's proprietary information. They haven't really shared how much their safety issue, what their specific safety issues are. But one of the things we pointed out to them is by putting the ramp 100 feet from our property line, they've made their building more safe, but they haven't made us more safe. Mm-hmm. And after 9/11, safety's a big concern, and we understand that, and they changed a lot on their campus to reflect the need to protect the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, like the sculpture garden. You probably know about that, because I don't think you can get in there anymore, but you used to be able to. Is that right, or how's that work? There's like some sculptures that I've never even gotten close to.
They're open. It turns out they're open during the, from spring to end of the summer.
Oh, yeah.
But it's and they not, close in the wintertime.
Okay, I'll put
but it's not a well-advertised.
No, it's a little weird.
Yes.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about, so I saw this rendering that they made. It was the nicest rendering of a car parking lot I've ever seen in my life, because like you really couldn't see the parking lot at all. It was just like some
too
flowers.
Many flowers
and a
trees.
Guy in the front with a tree and a flower, and then
and a couple, lovely happy couple. Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. That was pretty funny to me.
Well, they also used wide angle.
Yeah.
Lens made it look very wide angle, so everything in front was huge and everything in the back was small, and we produced our own graphics that showed the scale of the footprint of the parking ramp in relation to the residential and the other historic buildings in our area. You really got a sense for how enormous this thing is, how the footprint overpowers all the surrounding buildings, and that's one of the big points that the comprehensive plan and some of those other plans say, that everything that's built has to be compatible with its neighbors. Mm-hmm. Not even to talk about shadowing, and we know that there's a bike path that runs along there. What's going to happen in the wintertime? That building is exactly on the bike path. So it's going to create a tunnel effect, a tower effect, and you'll have problems with snow and ice buildup.
It's right where the Cedar Avenue Trail turns.
Yes.
Is that sharp right angle corner? Is that
and
right
they are going to smooth out the angle.
Yeah, okay.
And it runs from there all the way back to pretty close to where the bridge is.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a pretty big, long, flat building.
The other thing you mentioned, Nancy, was the coalition, you know, these different groups that you hadn't been aware of that you ended up encountering once you started this petition and got the website going. Tell me who all you've been in touch with and how that's been working out.
Well, we prepared our report for the Planning Commission, and we included all the letters of opposition from the people that the groups that we've reached out to, and those include Friends of the Mississippi, the Sierra Club, the Alliance, Neighbors
for... The Alliance of what? The Alliance?
You know, I don't know that much about the Alliance. We haven't... They were a late comer.
Oh, okay. I'll have to look into
all look the into Alliance. That. They're an excellent organization.
Right. I'll take your word for it.
And also Our Streets, which is a really strong biking group, bike group.
And the Neighbors from Our Neighbors.
Neighbors from Our Neighbors, who obviously by their name are a strong group of people that are advocating for housing for people and not cars.
Yeah, I saw a sign on the way over here in one of your neighbors' townhomes.
Yes.
Homes, so.
Yes.
That's what it said. It said housing for people, not cars, or something
right.
like that.
Yep. And so, again, everybody has their own focus, but they all recognize that there's a common goal here. There's a common purpose, and our ask is that we halt the ramp until the people and the city and the Federal Reserve, we can all meet together to sit down at the table and figure out if this is the best use of the land on the Mississippi River for the citizens and the future of Minneapolis. And people seems to resonate with people. We really have learned too, after our presentation to the Planning Commission, that there's a greater issue about transportation and mobility and sustainability. And we were challenged by one of the members of the Planning Commission to not end at Halt the Ramp, but go forward, to go to the state capitol, to go to St. Paul and ask for help in developing a real strong network of transportation that everybody can use, and that prepares the way for the ambitious goals that the city has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just had I live in St. Paul, and Mayor Carter is our mayor now, and he was just in D.C. testifying in front of the Senate. No, it's probably the House of Representatives, wasn't it? About climate change and climate action plans, and it's a thing, you know. But then at the same time, you still have the cities building parking ramps downtown, and where you have all the buses, and it seems counterintuitive, and that's if you're thinking about actually climate change and what it really means, that's tough to swallow that, I think.
Well, it is, because what we're basically asking is what is the good of a 2040 plan? What's the benefit of CO2 reduction by 80% if you're not going to start now? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, why would you put yourself in the hole to the tune of 177 tons of CO2 on a yearly basis when you could say, don't want to do that, you know? And that was the calculation we came up with. It said this is what the parking ramp
would
cost.
Oh, you did the math on CO2?
Yes.
Wow.
Tom is brilliant.
Oh, yes. Excellent.
There's a lot of great data on the amount of CO2 generated by the speed of traffic, and the research done by the University of California, Riverside, using data from the LA freeways, which I know intimately well.
Unfortunately,
show the slower you go, the more CO2 you're generating, because you're just sitting there idling. And we do not have the European technology, which very common of every time a car stops engine shuts off. Well, here, that's not the case. So we said from the design of the access points into the car park that traffic can't move. No matter what you do, traffic can't move more than 10 mile an hour if it's congested. Uh-huh. And so we used at that rate, and we took the average number of days that work, and then we ended up with 177 tons per year.
Okay. Every year.
Yeah. Everywhere. Yeah.
The other group were climate change warriors and bikers and ordinary people who supplied us with information, who came to the petition signing table on Saturday mornings and helped us gather petition signers. And we found out that the more freeway lanes you build, the more cars will drive it. The more parking ramps you build, more people will park. So it's an incentive to drive more if you build a parking ramp.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
We also looked around, and there are some cities, New York, Paris,
London,
that are taking drastic steps to reduce the carbon emissions in their town and to make the city more livable. They're not pleasant. The pain of what they're asking for. You know, New York, you've got to pay to come into the city.
Not yet, but hopefully soon.
Yes.
Or you have to pay to get over the bridge. To get in.
So. That's going to change. That's going to upset a lot of people. That really is. But a lot of the younger people we talk to don't seem to have a problem with it. And we talked to, at the Planning Commission, many business owners and groups, we need parking. We need parking to attract people to our area, people to work here, people to live here. We found that's not really true. Millennials aren't going to come and live and work in downtown Minneapolis or for the Federal Reserve or the neighborhood because there's parking. They've said that. They spoke before the Planning Commission. It was really heartening that we have this whole circle of people who understand it, who have their own thoughts about it, but also see at the same time this is not a good thing right now.
Mm-hmm. So the commission meeting, how did that go? The vote was close, is what I remember.
So the vote was 4-4, and the president of the was the deciding vote on the first two, and then the land use was 7-1. So there was one dissenter, but the rest of the commissioners were basically said done. So at that point it was rejected. The bank had until Thursday, 10 days after the meeting, the bank had the right to appeal. And they waited till right at the end, and then they filed an appeal.
Of course they did.
And that's,
you know, it's pretty impressive to take on the Federal Reserve Bank. A lot of people have tried to do that economically and failed, so you a pretty impressive group here, I'd say.
Well, thank you.
We've learned a lot.
Yes.
And like I say, or Thomas said, they are good neighbors. There's nothing that they've done in the past or probably in the future. We believe they're good citizens. Dr. Carter, one of their senior vice president, talked at length about what good citizens they were, what they gave back to the city of Minneapolis. There was nothing he said that we disagreed with. It's just, we don't think that they have the right take on this, and we're asking them to rethink that.
Mm-hmm. So going forward, the next escalation is to come up in front of the Zoning and Planning Committee. That's a committee made up of city council members. And they will, our understanding is they will come forward to the August 1st meeting and they'll file for a continuance, which basically says they will have about a month or so, unless they decide to go earlier, to submit revisions to their plan.
Not a new one, just revisions to the existing plan.
And they're constrained by what would constitute a revision. Otherwise, the city planners would say, this is a new proposal. Mm-hmm. Go all the way back to the beginning of the drawing board. So at this point, they are cross-checking with the council members.
We don't know what they're doing, really.
And we have not seen anything in terms of a plan or a proposal. It's they are working their options, and whatever they decide.
So that's what they're doing. What are you doing?
Good question. We're hoping that the same group of people, of groups in our coalition will join us. We're also reaching out to more transportation people. We'd like to reach out to people at the university who've studied this more. One key group that I forgot to mention was that the city planning staff also recommended denial of this project.
That's actually a pretty good sign for your movement, your efforts.
Exactly. And what we want to do is expand. We know that there are six people on the Planning Commission. They're all council people. So we're asking people who listen to this, who are still engaged, to reach out to their council person, to send phone calls, letters, emails, engage their friends.
So you're talking about the Zoning and Planning Committee of the City Council?
Yes.
Correct.
Right.
And then after that, it goes to the city council. So why not? Let's just talk to everybody on the city council.
You know which council members are on that committee?
We do.
Off the top of your head there.
We do.
Which ones are they? Let's just list.
Oh, off the top of my head. Oh, heavens no. I can barely remember my own name.
So Lisa Bender.
Okay.
Lisa Goodman.
Okay.
Schroeder. Cab Marshall. Cam?
Gordon.
Cam Gordon.
And there's one more.
Okay.
Pretty good, huh?
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's enough votes anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably the next step, I guess, for you, is talking to those folks a little bit.
And if anybody has any good ideas, reach out to us. We're Halt the Ramp on Facebook. Because this is a whole, we're learning this level as we go, this level of engagement as we go. Because we do know, we do think that the Federal Reserve is going to be lobbying other businesses and people who do want a parking ramp.
Mm-hmm. And we would be stunned if they weren't touching base with each of the council members.
Oh, yeah. They have their phone number for sure.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
and they should touch base. They're a significant organization, and this is, so far, a significant investment for them.
Great.
We also have heard from other people, transportation people, that there are thought-leading businesses who have created a really good transportation plan for their employees. So we're going to try and find out that kind of information.
The University of Minnesota is really good at it. The hospital in St. Paul that I know about, the Regents Hospital, is really good at that.
Wonderful.
There's lots of downtown businesses that do a good job.
Yeah.
But not everybody.
No, not everybody. We want them to stay. We don't want them to go. We know that people will change their transportation pattern. We know that people park far away, jump on the light rail, start the party before the Viking game or the Minnesota Twins game. That was unheard of 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And now it's normal. Nobody in their right mind would come down here and park on a Viking Sunday.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I have to say, though, I did find street parking near your house just now, with no problem at all.
Oh,
for free.
Wow.
So how do you like that?
That's pretty unusual.
Yes, good job. Don't ever give that up. You have to stay here now.
Well, 4 hours is the limit, I think.
We know there's a lot of kids in the neighborhood. We know that there's some residential groups that are really in favor of this ramp. Well, to think about their kids and those people being right above First Street, getting all those fumes, and the Federal Reserve employees, that's going to drift along to them as well, that CO2 that's being pumped into the atmosphere.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's about the future.
Yes.
It's all about the future.
Okay. Well, that's about all the questions I had, Tom and Nancy. Is there anything I didn't ask you about that you wanted to mention?
No, I...
Oh, watch and show up and give testimony at the zoning and planning committee meeting.
Whenever that is.
Whenever that is. Okay. The end of August, the beginning of September.
Right.
Because I think one of the things that's been really heartwarming is everyone said, we didn't think you could do this. Huh. And the sheer number of people signing the petition and sending letters stunned everyone. And that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I have a new belief in grassroots politics and grassroots movements. And we know for a fact that we can't expect Washington or even St. Paul to solve our problems if we aren't willing to roll up our sleeves and start doing them ourselves.
Great. Well, thanks, Nancy. Thanks, Tom, for talking to me today, and good luck with everything.
Thanks very much for
having
us.
All
right.
Yeah. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks for listening to the Streets MN podcast. If you're interested in joining a conversation about Minnesota's transportation and land use, direct your browser to streets.mn. Content for Streets MN is volunteer-driven.